month off. What a break.
I did not expect that.
No, what did you do? How was your month?
Family stuff, funerals.
What's the snore button? Oh, okay. I won't do that. You just said funeral.
Feel free. No, go ahead.
No.
Trust your instinct.
I mean, actually, that's like the deepest snore, actually. Rest in peace to your family member.
You're not going to get a deeper sleep than
you
that.
You know them, right? You can just go to funerals on the whim.
You know, just, it's like a misconnection. So you just go to random funerals.
Dude, in college, I went to a Jesuit college and our theology professor asked us to go to different ceremonies, go to a ceremony of a different religion and just sort of partake. I was like, I went to a Lutheran mass. And my other friend was like, oh, I went there. Some kid in the back of the room was like, I went to a Greek funeral of a man he didn't know.
Wow.
And then got invited to the repast, or whatever the Greeks would call it. You got anybody?
The repast.
If you never heard of a repast, literally, it's the party after.
First time I'm hearing the word.
You don't hang out with enough Irish people because they... Let me tell you something.
Is that what the Irish call it? Yeah, I thought it was just awake.
Okay,
when they get drunk.
Awake, yeah. No. It's called a repast. Let me tell you something. What a blast. they really celebrate the life of a human being.
The scene in, what's the movie? The
Snatch?
Snatch. Snatched.
Yeah.
Snatch or Snatch?
No, Snatch.
Snatch. Anyway. Yeah. The scene.
Snatch is about me if I start Ozempic.
But there's that scene where Brad Pitt is like losing his mind drinking.
Yeah.
And it's like slow-mo. And I'm like, yeah, that seems like a cool place to be at. You can drink and fight and mourn.
Yeah, that's a repast. But everyone tells great stories about the person who passed.
Okay.
More than they do like, oh, what a sad moment.
Sure,
You celebrate the life of the person, which I think is a smart way to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The other thing I did yesterday, actually, was
Tell me about yesterday. Because you had a month, but this is really...
But yesterday, I played in my Sunday League playoffs.
Mm.
First game, we were in two divisions, so we qualified for both. So we had two sets of potential playoff games, semifinal, final. First semifinal, 0-0. Great game. We just couldn't score. Good game goes to penalties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, everybody's like, oh, who wants to take a penalty? I'm like, let me do it. I'm gonna sign up. I feel good about it.
Pussies talk about it while I go up there and bag one for the boys.
So I had never taken a penalty before. My first penalty of my career.
Okay.
Went up there. It was
Is it typical spacing of a
no,
penalty?
No, it's much closer.
Okay.
But we one of our other players missed one earlier, but then our goalkeeper stopped one. So we're basically tied.
Yeah.
Up until the last. So then the other team went first, so they scored. So they got the fifth penalty. I'm number five.
Right.
Got to tie it up to keep it going.
Right.
I hit the crossbar.
Oh my, the crossbar.
Bro.
Isn't that what someone in the World Cup did that? Did they not?
Lionel Messi. Lionel Messi are the same guy.
Bro. did you try to top in it? Or?
I went up there being like, I'm going to hit this as hard as I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to go, I wasn't trying to go low. But because the keeper was a pretty tall keeper, I'm like, he's been diving low and getting them, and it's not a full size goal,
right?
It's a little bit smaller, so
it's one of those quick goals.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm just gonna blast this. I'm too close. He's not gonna get it. And as soon as I hit it, I saw him move, and I'm like, he's not getting it. Like, I hit it too hard. And then it just
did
carried
you Young,
so much.
Did you Nick Young turn around and start pointing at the back?
It actually hit the post and the crossbar. Like,
damn, you doubled up.
It's the worst.
You went for the highlight reel. That's your problem.
I just went to hit it hard. That's what it is.
You know what? Subconsciously, you were like, watch this, bro.
not even a little.
I'm hitting the chain on the corner.
I just like, it is a moment. I saw the ball in the net. You know what I mean? Before I got up there. And I just, I think, you know what the main thing is? What I didn't do, and like in hindsight, what I should have done is I should have looked at the goal. Like I just looked at the ball. I was just like, I'm just going to blast.
Well, usually it's a tell subconsciously where you look.
Right. That's why I didn't. I'm like, oh, if I look in a certain direction, he might guess that I'm going that way. Yeah. So I'm like, let me not look at anything. I didn't even look at the goalkeeper. I'm just like, let me just blast this ball. And as soon as it left my foot, I'm like, I looked at him.
Yeah,
I'm like, this is it. Now I'm keeping this going. And then the toughest feeling is like, you hit the post, You hear the whistle, you turn around, the other team is celebrating, my team is miserable, and I'm like, and it's all my fault.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Your confidence led you astray in this situation.
One of the most difficult feelings, just me, Messi, Roberto Baggio, we're all in
Zaza Simone.
We're all in a unique group of, you know.
That's it. The list stops there.
Now I can finally go to the meetings and,
But you didn't ask me. My month was great. You didn't care, right? You wanted to talk about your penalty
Okay. Well, I didn't even get to it, but all right. Fine.
I shot some food content.
Okay.
And no one will probably ever see it.
But then it's just you eating. It's not content.
Because that's the problem was me and another comedian. We're like, bro, let's just go out and do something, right? We were both getting like itchy to do some type of food content. We had done food stuff before. We both had pilots on the Food Network. One of them together was me and Mike Albanese. And we're like, bro, let's go film something. His studio is 2 blocks from ours. Mm-hmm. So we're like, yeah, why don't we do something in Midtown, bro? No one ever talks about Midtown. So we're like, yeah. And then he was like, bro, if we hurry up, we could go do a happy hour. I'm like, hey, let's do that. So we hit up 3 different happy hours in one night. And I look back at the footage. It's just 2 big drunk guys is all it is. We're like not even reacting to the food. We're just eating. There's literally nothing there. I'm like, damn, I watched this like 4 times. And every time I watched it, I just got a little bit sadder. There is no actual content. It's honestly like if you and I said, let's film ourselves watching soccer, and we just watch soccer. We didn't have any, there were no big reactions. We didn't talk.
Maybe there's an audience for it.
Maybe there's some ASMR that I could make out of this thing. But nothing happened. I think in total, we spent something like $280.
What's the point? Why did you bring the camera? You went on a date.
An Insta360 sat with us while we ate. It's all we did. And it was good food. We enjoyed ourselves.
Sure it was. No, the world will know.
The food was good. The drinks were good. And the vibes were good. But I have zero proof of it, even though I have full 360-degree video of everything that happened.
Okay. Why would Food Network trust you with making a show?
Well, this is why the shows were in greenlit. And they were like, could you react to the food?
I was
like,
put effort.
Shut up, I'm eating.
Besides just stuffing the food in my face, maybe I have that's to try.
Maybe wow. Shut up, I'm eating is the name of the show.
All right. Well, look. There's plenty of Korean YouTubers people love watching that.
It's a mukbang, but with a shh at the beginning of it.
Okay. Well, we are back. Welcome back to the Cooligans after a long World Cup.
I hope I hit the right button. I don't even know.
I can't hear anything. Yeah, it's not loud enough. Anyway, we'll sort that out. Welcome back to the show, everybody. Yes, we've been off for a couple updates and changes that we'll talk about throughout the show. The schedule's changing. That is the first one. And we'll get to a bunch of other things. But welcome back. If you are new after this World Cup break and you're now excited about soccer and locking in. We are the Cooligans. My name is Christian Polanco.
I'm Alexis Guerreros.
And we're here. Back at Yahoo Sports. We're excited to rejoin the team, re-sign a new deal. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot to look forward to.
Bro, okay? It was crazy. Premier League tried to sign us because they got all that money, right? And then Saudi League came approached them, all that PIF money. We're waving it in our faces like, yo, 2 years, no taxes, dog. Mm. But we said, bro, we got our family. At Yahoo. We ain't trying to go nowhere.
That's right. They were going to make us wear the garb.
The robe.
The Saudi robes.
The sheer robe that Lionel Messi wore when he won the World Cup.
Exactly. And we said, you know what?
Which might be a Qatari thing. We might be offending somebody.
But it clashes with the cool office that we're excited to be wearing. But we're excited to be back and continue doing what you all know and love when it comes to...
And by the way, look, there's going to be a couple of changes as we go along where we're advancing, right? We're moving on, right? We're learning new tricks, right? That time we spent in the hotel really worked out for us. But here's what I'll say. We tried a bunch of new stuff and now we're taking it back home. But here's what I'll say. We're going to piecemeal it as we go. But you know who hears about it first? Our members. And that's important. So a lot of our members know this. A lot of our Patreon know this. We've closed our Patreon. We've moved everything to our YouTube members. So they will be getting videos early. They're going to be getting cool new videos. We're going to be doing a bunch of crazy stuff that they will hear about first.
Just videos of Alexis eating
only.
You know what? No, maybe
not,
I'll
not
do that.
Speaking.
I might put some of it in there, and then you just tell me if there's anything
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. He's gonna attach a microphone to his teeth.
Bro, chomp vision. If we got rev cam, there's no reason we don't have chomp cam, dude. But at the end of the day, our members are gonna receive a bunch of stuff. Plus, live is gonna become a really big part of the show. So if you haven't experienced what our YouTube lives look like or feel like, get on board. Check it out. It's going to be a big part of what we do moving forward. And our members are going to be, they're going to get a couple benefits of that.
Exactly. So make sure on YouTube, go to youtube.com/TacoCooligans and hit join, especially if you are already on the Patreon. Cancel your Patreon and join on YouTube. Go do that.
I thought we deleted our Patreon.
No, it's not a guarantee that if we delete our Patreon that the people will not get charged. That's my issue. So right now people are not getting charged. It's like on pause.
Got it.
But cancel your membership on the Patreon anyway. So make sure that you do that if you have not done that yet. I would say probably about half the people have done it. And I've messaged.
You're going to get a nice big discount by doing that, by the way.
So it is cheaper on YouTube. So go youtube.com/TacoCooligans and hit the join button while you're there. And then the other update is that we're going to be changing our schedule from Monday, Thursday to Monday, Wednesday. So we're going to be on the podcast will be being released on Mondays and Wednesdays. So one day earlier. Obviously we'll be focusing a lot, especially on Champions League. Those Champions League Wednesdays.
And which we kind of do on Thursday anyway.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So be on the lookout for that. So that's how your life is changing after this, break that we've had. So feel free to reach out if you have any questions, especially anybody in the Discord. All right. It's all good. It happens. We're
alerting you as to what we're going to talk about just next.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. But let's get back to some soccer.
Yes. Everybody. A lot of soccer is happening. Let's talk about one of the most important topics is Lionel Messi, because he just updated us all. He's also made some changes in the last month. He is now officially retiring again, technically,
I know, right?
From international football. And I think at this age, at 39, you have to assume he means it this time. I don't think he's going to be lulled back. He's not trying to make changes to the federation. Yeah, he was trying to make changes to the federation, trying to let people know I'm unhappy with what's happening here at the federation. Clearly, it worked because they've won the World Cup since. But I have to ask, at 39 years old, yes, this is probably it for him. But doesn't it still kind of feel too soon? He was really effective in the World Cup. He recently scored 4 goals in an MLS match. The kid still got it. Maybe he's not going to be available for the next World Cup, which is probably why he's like, time to move on. But I feel like he might still have something to give in the next Copa America.
Possibly, right? There's also an aspect of like nobody wants him to see him retire because he makes too many people too much money. So I'm sure the Moss family and the Beckham family are like, please keep stay on board.
And the insert Argentinians family also don't want him to retire. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a player. Well, when you say it's my thought of it being like too soon is weirdly for a guy who plays pretty much every game. He's hardly ever injured. He's hardly ever like seriously injured. I mean, he might miss 2-3 games, and that's like a long stretch, and that's frustrating, I'm sure, for Argentina and frustrating for Inter Miami. But his play style, which is like, I ain't defending, I'm just walking around.
Yeah.
Till you get me the ball.
He's super casual unless the ball's in their final third. You know what I mean?
Right,
unless
they're
attacking.
So having that, a player like that, where he like clearly also takes care of his body, I'm sure immensely. And then he's just also not hurt that often. You kind of think like, man, how you could probably keep going a little bit longer. But in reality, like, what more does he need to do?
And that's, I think that's an important part of the conversation, because the answer is nothing, right?
Right.
Like, Lionel Messi doesn't really have to do much else in order to sort of prove who he is. I think at this point now, unless you're just a really big Ronaldo stan, you have Lionel Messi as the GOAT, right? Mm. He's won the World Cup. You saw how effective he was in a World Cup. Cristiano Ronaldo's never been effective in a World Cup. Certainly not in the knockout rounds. And you saw what happened this year where everyone assumed Portugal might be a favorite. I had them listed as maybe not even making the knockout rounds. And you saw what happened, right? Mm-hmm. So I think at the end of the day, the conversation is probably really between him and Maradona at this point as to who's the greatest of all time. Does him winning another Copa America clear up any issue that any asterisk anyone might have.
Right? No,
I don't think so.
I mean, look. If he would have won this World Cup, everything is set in stone as far as his legacy.
No, because
and
the Ronaldo stands are still going to tell you that FIFA let him.
Do you
cheat.
Think I care for these?
No,
people?
No. But that's why it can't be set in stone.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I disagree. I mean, you know,
it is to those of us who have common sense. Yeah.
So yeah. But there is as you know, we've gotten to see Messi play several times. I never got to see him play at Barcelona, but watching him play for PSG, watching him play for Miami. So we've gotten to...
And we saw him in Argentina as well.
Yeah, yeah. So we've gotten the experience of witnessing that greatness. Mm-hmm. But that's... Now it's starting to feel selfish to be like, please, a little bit more, Messi.
You've never been at the end of a concert and you're like, otro más, otra. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's kind of what we're asking. And in a way, does this help MLS? Him retiring from international football gives you the fear that he's probably going to announce a retirement from football in total soon, right?
I think that's another debate as well, because I've also seen a lot of discourse about how that Messi playing in MLS hasn't done anything for MLS. Like, or not anything is an exaggeration, but hasn't really done what they wanted it to do. And it has not propelled the league into just like a grander space. Yes, Messi is playing, and that's exciting. And there, some people will tune into those games. But look at the example of like the Apple TV deal ending early. That's not a good sign, right? Like
that's a very bad sign.
That it's a sign that what they wanted Messi to bring as far as interest into the league has not exactly happened. I mean, when the first year and a half, I think there was a huge buzz, but it hasn't. I think it highlights the kind of bigger, like, why do we watch soccer? Is it because of the individual players that are fantastic? Yes, that is, I would say that's like probably 75% about like why we sort of watch. But then I think the bigger aspect or the thing that has a lot of influence that we don't exactly highlight is the connection to that club, right? Connection to the organization.
Does
to
a game that doesn't mean anything still mean something to you? You know, like a game that doesn't have a major change in the standings.
Exactly.
Or isn't going to provide you an advancement into European competition or some other level of competition. Is a regular match still super important to you? And I think at the end of the day, if you want casual viewers to potentially fall in love with the league, you say you have to keep Messi in there. And maybe him retiring from international football gives him a little bit more energy and a little bit more grace and saying, you know what, I can continue to play in MLS for another year or two because I'm not being brought to, I get more breaks. I'm not being, you know, I don't have to go to camps. I don't have to play an international competition. This is my only responsibility. I can live in Miami with my family fairly comfortably. Yeah. Probably the only place you can really live comfortably in the world is probably the US, as comfortably as anywhere else, or much more comfortable than anywhere else. So maybe that keeps him. But if you're looking at the league itself, I would have to assume two things have happened that are positives from the Lionel Messi integration. Which, first of all, let me just say off the bat, there's no way you say no to Lionel Messi joining the league.
Pay him whatever he
wants.
It
doesn't matter what the money, whatever. It's a test worth taking. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see what this experiment provides. Has this experiment provided enough? We could sit here and argue that it hasn't, but there's two ways where I think it has. One, it's made more casual viewers internationally care about the league a little more, whether it's for that moment, and maybe that moment's passed, which again, that is on the league to not have found ways to grip people's attention, which we were very critical of during the World Cup as well. Where were the ads? Where was the connection of the people playing in the World Cup to MLS? Where was the mentions of MLS of people being like, oh, I'm watching this game for the first time. Oh, this is the way that we have it from here. It was to me spit into a void. I don't think anyone noticed that. Anyone that needed to notice that saw that. So you made more casual viewers follow the league. That's undeniable, right? Now, the second way where I think it's helped is in a way I feel like it's opened the door for more players that are in the same realm that he was, which is possible of still playing in Europe, but would probably, I don't want to say has aged themselves out, but they're just past their prime. and can still give a lot more to a league like MLS. And they brought him in here. I think without a doubt, it's not the only reason, but I think Son, Heung-min Son, I think Lewandowski, I think Griezmann, I think players of that ilk, Thomas Muller, I think players of that ilk maybe don't weigh MLS as heavily if it isn't for Messi.
I don't disagree at all. I think overall the
Casemiro and the players that play with them, for sure.
Yeah, but it's like all the players you're describing are players that very likely wouldn't be able to get the amount of money that they got from MLS.
For sure.
In Europe and but in MLS those highly competitive
MLS
leagues.
MLS isn't the only option.
No, I know that. I know that. I'm just saying, like, there's a certain caliber of play. There's the caliber of player we're missing is, like, the 24 to 29 year old that is like that in their prime that it's as simple as competing with like with Arsenal, Man City, Juventus, Inter Milan, like and Juventus and Milan are in a different stratosphere compared to where to where the Premier League clubs are at, right? They're clearly beneath. They just do not have the money like
Premier
that.
League just has this overwhelming amount of money.
Yeah, and it's becoming a sort of problem for some of the other European leagues because they can't compete with the amount of money that the Premier League has.
And at the end of the day, will MLS ever compete for those players? To me, Gabriel Martinelli is a great example. What's Gabriel Martinelli? 25 years old? Do we know?
I don't know.
Look that up. 25 or 26, right? That player is now going for a record signing, a record sale for Arsenal, which is crazy.
From Arsenal, yeah.
He's 25 years old, fairly young, not in his prime yet. He's going to Al Hilal because Al Hilal or the Saudi League can pay 50 million pounds, which is what, $70 million, something like that, 60-something million U.S. dollars. There's no MLS club that's paying that kind of money for any player.
Yeah.
So I don't know that we fight for those players. Martinelli is a good example of someone who may potentially come to MLS, even if it's for a year or two. I can hide out here for a year or two. There was nobody that wanted me immediately, show that I'm still good, and then get back to a European club. The same way, like, we all thought Osimhen would. Osimhen would go from Napoli to Galatasaray. Their window was open an extra month. They found a way to make a deal. He goes there, maybe plays for a year or two, maybe a couple, and then he goes back to Europe if he wants, or he stays in Turkey where he seems to be having a good time. We could be that same, MLS could be that same place where you will get players in your prime that have sort of run up against a weird situation in their contract or simply want a change of pace and maybe get a bounce back. But we're not paying that level.
Because there's no return. The owners could spend that money on like a DP.
Sure.
But for what?
Yeah.
There's no return.
There's no way I'm going to make $60 million exactly. or whatever
so,
it is.
So that's the main issue. So Messi being a part of MLS, obviously helped with get to a place where hopefully the returns are higher for those individual clubs and they happen like at the gate, right? We know like anytime Messi plays an away game, that MLS club is immediately making like $10 million more than they make like collectively in that one game. They make more collectively than almost like the entire season.
Yeah. So, especially if you're moving into an NFL size stadium like Kansas City.
Exactly.
Did.
So from a sort of short term financial perspective, I think that is where Messi's like biggest like sort of payoff has been. But do we look at Major League Soccer? Or do we look at American soccer like drastically differently? No. So I think the hope is that Messi gets people into the door. They stick around with their local club and continue just to build that interest and support in that community so that therefore the next TV deal is worth more than the one that they're currently in. That's the game.
And really that's what you're up against is building. So him being in the league helps build it because even at the very least, let's say Messi stays for two more years. When is the Apple deal over?
In 28, I think.
2028. All right. So then he'd still be in the league as you're like negotiating.
Yeah.
You know, I can't imagine you get him to stay much longer. But him being in the league opens doors to different brands, opens doors to different sponsors.
Yeah.
It just opens doors to different conversations. We have the greatest player in history playing here. This is no different than when Pele played at NASL. The problem was the moment he stopped, the league collapsed.
Yeah.
I don't think MLS is in that space.
Right.
But the fear is that you sort of get bumped back down to where you were prior.
Yeah. Well, you got to fit. We like, is his son that's going to be the next sort of face of the league or whatever? I don't know. I think the interesting Messi retiring from Argentina is already the bells are ringing for Major League Soccer. Like, all right, well, how long do we have him?
Yeah.
His, you know, the last, like, what, 2-3 weeks ago, his father
passed away.
Jorge Messi passed away. And
which
and
was the funeral you were at.
Exactly. Yeah. uninvited, obviously. but he mentioned that in one of his posts or notes or whatever, highlighting, like, I don't know how much longer I can keep doing this, right?
Like, or the desire, the need to keep playing is gone.
Exactly. And his father was not only his father, his agent, his representative, since he was about 14 years old.
Yeah.
He, you know, Lionel Messi got his family out of poverty to become a global brand and global icon and all that stuff. So it's the questions are now, like, could this be his final season? He is contracted, I think, for one more season.
Right.
But we'll see how sort of long he goes. As far as athletically, he seems fine. And he, you know, scoring 4 goals against Montreal, which almost anybody seemingly these days can do
that. Still impressive that someone at this age is doing this. Especially with his XG is 1.2 and he's scoring 4.
How does Montreal keep letting this happen? There was the other highlight last year.
I think it's their kink. You know what I mean? I just think CF Montreal is like, whip me, daddy. You know what I mean?
Well, this is like, because he's cutting through like 12 defenders and it's like, The coach is out there trying to be like, yo, should I get it?
He's telling the fans, yo, get out there. Stop this guy.
Because you can't be letting him have these highlights against you that where it looks like nobody can defend against him. Just at the very least, foul him. A penalty. Be like, okay.
Alexis Sanchez, take him out.
You're already down 4 goals. Okay, how about, you know what, this one? You're going to have to earn this one.
Yeah.
This is so insane.
You got to go hard in the paint, dog.
so it's obviously sad for a lot of, you know, the World Cup LARPers, as they say. You know, that, you know, if this was your first time watching Messi at a World Cup, that's it. You're done. You're not going
to
see him.
Well, at least you got to see him.
At least you got to see him. So, but yeah, so it's like, it's bittersweet already. We already know that the end is coming for some, just an unbelievable player that just, it doesn't make sense how he's able to continue to do things that he does. But it would be unrealistic to be like, damn, we just go on until you physically.
You know what, Lionel Messi, keep playing until we say we're ready for you to stop. Okay, is that possible? Yeah,
yeah. You know, respect our boundary a little bit.
U.S. Soccer has decided that they will be taking over, absorbing USYS, which is an incredible thing that, first of all, I can't believe it didn't already happen before. The fact that this wasn't already a part of U.S. Soccer is crazy. But this is the first step in what we hope are very many, because this is just not enough to fix the issues with U.S. Soccer and what we have right now.
Yeah, so this is a big sort of undertaking in that there are a lot. So for anybody... just a quick explainer. When it comes to youth soccer, there are 54 entities. Obviously, it's a very big country. So every state has a U.S. youth soccer entity of
Texas,
some kind.
Texas, California, New York, and I think another one have multiple.
Have two.
Yeah.
So that's what. Yeah. So the issue right now is that and every World Cup, we always, especially every men's World Cup, we have the conversations of, how's the U.S. men? How are they going to win the World Cup? How are they going to win the World Cup? And organization of all these entities is the only way to kind of do it. Or at least, I wouldn't necessarily say it's the only way, but we have to try something new, right? Because we're not getting into a place where there is a clear kind of like pipeline of like, finding the best talent, finding ways to make the game affordable. There's like a several issues. So the problem with having it separated and compartmentalized like this is that U.S. Soccer is not the one saying, okay, this is the philosophy that we're going to have. this is what we're going to do.
Yeah, it's just not centralized in any way, shape, or form.
Right, which is like all the other smaller European countries do have that. And they just say, I'm sure there's a lot of, there's a little bit of different ideologies and perspectives, and people try to do a couple different things. But for the most part, the federation says like, okay, this is how we're going to play. This is our identity. This is what we're going to prioritize. Yep. And you with the United States, it's just not really been the case. So this is a big announcement for U.S. soccer, essentially saying they're going to overhaul how they work with youth soccer organizations. So instead of it effectively being like a I'm not probably using the right verbiage, but instead of it being like separated and private, they're going to work together to find a common identity and common goals. And this is the most important sentence
here for the statement that U.S. soccer released. And we're not going to read the whole thing, but the last sentence is important. The best days of American soccer are ahead of us. And then it says, be on the lookout for ways. So the penultimate statement, but sentence to me, I think that's important, because if we look at the way that it's structured today, is clearly we're making amends of the structure. And, you know, with the way the ODP used to be super important, and that's sort of been diminished by the strength of these traveling clubs and US Club, which is another outfit, and all these other sort of organizations that a child has an interest in being a part of, right? Because when you're young, you want to win, right? Of course you want to win. Where in Europe or in South America and other nations, these kids go into like the club atmosphere, the academy atmosphere associated with a professional club, with the interest in becoming a better player, right? And the more you become a better player, the more you rise through the ranks. Whereas here, it's like, if you show you're a winner, you get into a better high school. If you get into a better high school and you win at that high school, you get into a better college. And that's sort of where the interest of the parent kind of ends, right? Then the overwhelming majority of parents of children that play soccer, even at a high level in the US, don't have the thought of, I want my kid to be a pro. They simply have the thought of, how do I get in my college for free? That's what college football does. College baseball, college hockey, all these things are like, do I get a free ride for college? Because parents, it's an overwhelming cost. And that's why having these conversations with like, well, here's how they do it in other countries. Like they have the infrastructure we don't have. They have free healthcare in case a kid gets injured. It's not going to cost the parent a lot of money. They have
all right, Mom Donnie, tone it down, dog.
Enough with the potholes. Fix this. Right? If a kid wants to play soccer, he doesn't have to travel to all these crazy places because it's all going to be centralized for him, right? And they feed them, they house them if need be in some cases. They have a schooling, right? We've been to the Borussia Dortmund Academy, which is basically like a big dormitory, right? There's schooling that they can take part of. And
we didn't play in it. We just was
we went there and they were like, who are you guys? Please stop eating the food for the children.
We took a tour, obviously. Yeah.
The point is that it's built specifically so that these kids have all of the issues we're talking about minimized, and so that sometimes the parents even brought in as employees to help give them sort of a job if they don't have one. It's not all the time, but it happens. Whereas here we don't have that. And it even says in the article of The Athletic that Henry Bushnell wrote that, you know, it's going to be hard to convince a lot of these organizations, which make the majority of their money on the registration of these children. The more the children pay, the more. And by the way, that doesn't even finish the cost because they still have to travel. They have to put themselves up.
Yeah, it's so wildly expensive.
It's multiple thousands every year where that's a lot to ask of a child, especially if you come from a background, you don't have that expendable income. So the point is, right now, the best kids that are making it through the process are the ones whose parents can afford to put them through the process. So we're finding the best middle-class players in the country. That's the majority of what we're finding.
Yes. I mean, I see sort of two things happening, right? What's best for youth soccer players, what's best for kids, and then not necessarily what's best for these like academies and stuff, but that's going to be the friction is how the agreement, like how chill are these academies going to be, like especially these huge organizations like ECNL. There's a couple like really big ones that produce.
AYSO is huge.
Yeah. How on board are they going to be with being like, okay, I'm going to take less money to go forward with this, unifying idea of like, you know, getting everything under one umbrella. Like, that's going to be the harder part. I mean, you hope that...
Right, because this change doesn't take away pay for play.
It does not at all, right?
Which is what we were hoping it would.
What this kind of does is remove a little bit of... what U.S. Soccer, I think, is what they're attempting here, is to remove the competitive nature between these academies fighting for... talent and fighting for to get more kids and get and it's more money and you know this is like kind of similar with colleges, like, you know, like the Oregon Ducks, like the college football team,
yeah, which is like pro level.
They're like locker rooms and training super facilities are,
because it's Nike gives them all the technology,
sure,
in the world.
Sure, yeah. but that is that instead of reinvesting that into like the students, you know what I mean? They're like, no, we can get a whole bunch of money for like our athletic program. So obviously it's going to, if a kid has an opportunity to go to Alabama or Oregon, Alabama's probably not a great example because they also win a lot, but you know what I mean? Like it is a way to recruit more talent. That always seems to be the main focus. Like, recruit talent, get better academies, better teams, win more money comes in. U.S. Soccer saying like, all right, we need to chill with that. Like, it can't just be about you, the academies and the coaches making a whole bunch of money, and then the program ultimately suffers because we don't have a system in place to create the best talent. Like the children are seen as these commodities, right? And the parents themselves. So that's kind of...
Is there a way to do both though? And that's my big argument against the, because I use my brother-in-law and my sister-in-law as a good example. These are two. It was my wife's brother and his wife. It's just two white people, pretty well off, middle class. Mm-hmm. They have a child who's very good at soccer, much, much better at baseball and basketball. So he's a much bigger fan of that. But he's a big soccer fan. Like anybody who's growing up right now, it's another big sport to them in their mind. That probably wasn't the case when we were kids, right? So in his mind, he's like, yeah, I'd love to. And his mother goes, oh, dude, if he was better at soccer, I'd be telling him to play it more because then he'd get into college. And I'm like, how do I explain to this woman that he needs to be a pro at 16? You know what I mean?
Right.
And not in college. You know what I mean? How do I explain that he's already losing ground by not being his favorite sport right now?
All this reading and writing, like, nonsense.
Bro, math, dog? Bro, he's got a phone in his pocket. He don't need you, bro. But in my head, I'm like, how do I explain it? It's going to go in one ear and out the other because it's a world they don't understand. That's the majority of parents. And these youth clubs are sort of inhibiting that. They're saying like, no, he needs to be a part of a club. The kid wants to win, doesn't he? He wants to play at a big college. He wants to play with his friends. You know, why go to an academy where you're being told you're not good enough and you have to kick the ball by yourself 10,000 touches in a week or whatever the number is? You know, I can understand how hard of a sell that is, but those of us in the know in the sport kind of can look down and go, okay, but if that route is what the kids want, and it's kind of hurting, is there a way to bend it where maybe they can still do those things, which is kind of, you know, singularly American, but still advanced? Can a kid go to a college and still be part of an academy? Can the academy loan them to a college?
Okay, we got ideas, bro. Right?
I'm out here trying to make his money, bro.
Honestly, the portal open to an MLS Next team.
This is literally what I'm talking about. Right, like, if you're good enough for an MLS Next team, but you're not able to get as many minutes because that position is filled, who's to say that the MLS Next team can't say, like, okay, go get your associates at Akron. Right. Akron Zips used to be a big college. I don't know if they still are for soccer. Go do 2 years there. And then you can continue your studies virtually if you want. But that gives you 2 years to go play at a college. And when in the offseason, you can come back to us.
Yeah. I mean, look, this
because college kids used to play at like Bug Eaters and like Kingston.
Right. In the
Brigade.
Offseason. Right.
Was it Kingston Brigade? Kingston Stockade.
Kingston Stockade. Yeah. Who I bumped into Crowley the other day at a thing. Anyway, I think this kind of stuff highlights the more, you know, we get into these conversations about like, how do we make youth soccer better and improve it, and whether it's more affordable and the other side, we can't avoid the sort of grander political questions about Medicare for all and like the reason again these other countries succeed in this sport and we do not is because the players themselves, the families, have to worry about other things that those families in Europe do not have to worry about.
Yeah, of course.
And it's just a...
But, I mean, I don't think U.S. soccer can change that, but maybe can. there's some sort of health insurance that they could offer the players.
Maybe, but this is, again, it's like a thing that's slapping us in the face all the time. It's like, we just want to be like, why can't we just have good athletes and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay, well, there's a lot that it takes to create that great athlete that you now have, right? It's just, there's a foundation, stability, nutrition, a good family, some or a bad family that you hate your dad and you become motivated to.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. You might be a good podcaster / comedian. But here's what I'll say is it's hard for me to sit here in this conversation and say U.S. soccer needs to figure out the housing crisis or the inflation issues.
No, they don't. They go hand in hand.
They do go hand in hand. But I'm like, what could U.S. soccer do to fix the fact that there's youth players that are slipping through the cracks? Remember when Christian Pulisic years ago wrote the thing for Players Tribune where he said, or Player Tribune, I forget the name of the publication.
Players Tribune, yeah.
Where he said that even he played with players that he shocked were slipped through the cracks that were better than him at that time. And so I feel like there's even players in the system we have now. If you only want kids whose parents make $100,000 a year or more to play and end up on the men's national team, if that's your goal, I don't agree, but if that's your goal, okay. Yeah. But even some of those are slipping through the cracks. You know what I mean? Like, even some of those in this convoluted system we have aren't making it or aren't getting showcased to the right people. So at the end of the day, I look at the system we have now and I said, there's no system that's perfect, but we're so far from even a better option, which we've seen play out year in and year out in other nations. To me, Germany was a great example. In the early 2000s, they said, we have a 10-year plan. And by the end of that 10 years, they're winning the World Cup. So I look at it and I go, why are we not seeing what works for other people and using it for us?
It seems like this was what U.S. soccer is doing.
It's just the first step, but there's so much more.
Of just saying like, okay, things are a little chaotic, let's make them a little less chaotic and organized. I wonder what the pushback is going to be, because there's obviously going to be some. My main thought is by centralizing everything, again, it becomes a more communal, aka socialist, communist sort of ideal of like, let's centralize everything, let's control it.
You mean just how sports is everywhere, across the U.S.
Exactly. To make it so like, so we can all succeed within these guidelines. Like,
for those of you who are angry, this is how the NFL is. Right, this is how the NBA is.
Do what is best for the league and the sport versus what's best for like profit. Right, and the hope is like, everybody kind of wins if as soon as everything like stabilizes and grows and stuff like that, and we can become like a competitor with the rest of the world. But we have to do something to compete with the rest of the world, not by making it the Wild West of soccer and youth coaching and blah blah blah. And it's just like, all right, now parents are kind of confused, parents are lost. And then from a U.S. soccer perspective, it's like, all right, well, who's my go-to? Who do I look at to see where the best talent is on the men's and the women's and stuff like that? Like, the hope is that it just gets a little bit more streamlined and makes a little bit more sense the way other countries do it. Because the way it is right now, I don't get the sense that people care about like actually growing the sport. Like,
I'm sure some do.
I'm just saying, yeah. But like
the overall sense is they're like, but the I'm system, getting money off this
the
kid.
System. Yeah, the system itself doesn't say like, we want to win the World Cup. The system is the system itself says, yo, this is a great opportunity to make money. Yeah. And we have a lot of
this is like when Baron Trump was on DC United's Academy. Like, I'm sure the coach was like, this kid's ass. But what am I gonna do? How am I gonna be the one to say
bro,
no?
He was one of my favorite players, bro.
Bro, I had his jersey, dog.
I was like, this is the future. We got the 9-foot slender man playing midfield.
This was the shadowy figure in the Miami mall that they're refusing. I don't know if you heard about that.
I have not heard about that.
They said the police said it was 50 kids running around causing a ruckus, but there's no social media of it. They've deleted all the security footage. And all the people that left that mall said there was like a tall, shadowy figure. They believe an alien is in the mall. You didn't hear about this?
I did not hear.
Miami Mall, look this up. Here's the point I'm going to make. The last point I want to make about U.S. soccer is the last time you and I talked about this, I pitched my idea to create the States Cup.
Yes.
And by the way, now that every federation, every nation is going to have, I'm sorry, every state is going to have sort of their own federation, if you will. Mm. We're kind of edging our way there. But I pitched that idea to someone very high up in U.S. soccer during the month that we were off.
Yes.
Someone very high up at U.S. Soccer.
Very high up. Somebody who was at the will call booth.
Buddy. actually, it was just the guy wearing a U.S. Soccer hat at an airport. But let me tell you something. He was very tall. No, he very high up. Mm-hmm. And they specifically said that won't work because you're moving U.S. Soccer back to what it was. And I was like, I don't think you understand the idea at all. So we sat, this was actually in an airport lounge. We sat and we talked about it a little more. And at the end, he was like, interesting. He was like, watch the news. I think you'll be interested about, it's not what you're saying, but it's on its way.
Okay, okay.
So I think it was this. I think it was referencing this shakeup. And they also said that there's...
You're the reason this happened.
I'm not saying that. I am the reason for a few things. In fact, a pair of Nike shoes, which by the way, I'm very upset about. I did not get a free pair, even though it was my idea. But... They said in the statement, they said that they're going to be clarifying this a lot more towards the end of the summer. So we will be hearing more about this. But I think the reason you and I are having this conversation is twofold. One, we want to see more. And two, when I had that conversation on the podcast, I think that was actually our last episode, I got messages from people who are our listeners that have children in the system at an older level where yours is right now. Mm-hmm. And they were like, I got a few. Yo, I love that idea. And a few, you're like, here's why that wouldn't work. My interests are getting my kid into college, and I don't want to have to pay for college if I don't have to, but I want them to go to a good college and get a secondary option in case soccer doesn't work out in the future. So I heard a lot of feedback. So it clearly points to our audience has a lot of opinions on the subject from a position of higher knowledge than we do because they are involved in the system. They are seeing the complexity of the system on a week-to-week, day-to-day basis. And if that's the case, let us know in the comments, what is it that you think this is done for U.S. soccer? Is this a good thing? And what more needs to be done? Because I'm really interested. When you and I started this podcast now, 11 years ago, by the way, congratulations, which is our 11th anniversary. Mm-hmm. 11 years ago, we set out to build the fan base of this sport. And I think a lot of that comes from building the success of not just the way they get the gate, you know, how many fans go into a game, which is what we're interested in, but the success of the team that's actually playing on that pitch does that job itself. So I think this leads into what our ethos has been for the last 11 years and what will continue to be our ethos is building the fandom of this sport, you know? And I think the better the U.S. men's national team and the U.S. women's national team continues to do, the better that this job will be for everyone. So I think getting these kids through a system that's a little bit more obvious and a little bit more equitable and a little bit more merit-based and not just cash-based is better for everybody, including the kids who grew up the way we did, that I didn't even have an idea. Even if I was good at the sport, which I was not, which is why I talk about it instead of play. Even if I was good at it, there's no way my mother would have been able to take me to games. She worked 5 jobs. There's no way she would have been able to pay for the... I wore NFL-style cleats. I wore, like, American football-style cleats for, like, the first 2 years that I played because my mother was like, whatever's in that clearance bin is what we can afford. Yeah, just in the, and that was it.
The Barry Sanders 11s.
High up on the ankle.
real tight.
Bro, offensive lineman.
You're going forward and back, nothing else.
Buddy, lateral movement is not allowed, dog. I wore jean shorts in 2 games. I'm not a great example.
I would love to, maybe this would be a fun video. I would love to wear football cleats to play soccer and just to see what that feels like.
Now the two have merged a little bit closer. Like if a wide receiver cleats are essentially the same as soccer.
Okay, boots. Maybe. Yeah.
So it's not, but if you go back, bro,
bottom
was like,
they're much stiffer. Yeah, and the ankle is really, really solid.
I wore big boy boots. You know what I mean? I didn't wear like the fancy boy pink joints.
Okay.
You know what I mean? My joints was black and white. But to that example is there wouldn't have been a path for me, especially being a kid who was poor at the time. There was just no way. The best I could have done was just play locally in Newark. You know, Mateo is going to have much more opportunity because we understand the landscape a little more than what our parents understood.
Right now, it's mildly affordable, $150 a month.
That's crazy. You shouldn't have to be paying that.
I mean, but it's basically daycare.
It's a car note. You could get a really crappy car for $150.
You know, but that's what it costs. I mean, what am I going to do?
Stop. Don't let the kid play soccer anymore. Let's get him a car. Now, hear me out. Legally.
How wheels are. What is that?
At the end of the day, I think U.S. soccer has made advancements forward that I wasn't prepared for and I'm happy about. Now, can we continue down this road? Whatever those changes may be, you and I have a few ideas. I'm sure those of you watching have a couple ideas or listening. Put it in the comments. Let us know what you think because I think this is an important first step, but I don't want to take the pressure off U.S. soccer either.
So we were away for a month, and a lot of stuff happened as immediately after the World Cup. The Infantino news had happened, which we were when we were All-Star, about him trying to sell off a piece of the World Cup through private equity and this whole other thing. A lot of drama. A lot of people were upset about it. But what this ended up leading to was just fierce backlash from pretty much everybody. UEFA especially, this seemingly just being like, we will not be participating in any other FIFA event if this is something that that you follow through with. It's sort of highlighting the not just like it's like weird like there's it's clear like it's corruption. It's like corruption by like any way we would describe the word corruption. But Infantino is like, no, this is good, baby. This is nothing to do with anything. This is just like this is gonna lead to more money in your pocket. And yeah, that's even if it leads to more money in people's pocket, it doesn't take away from like what FIFA is supposed to stand for and what they're supposed to be doing. It's not meant to just make money. But this is the more recent news. Not only was UEFA trying to boycott FIFA tournaments, but they want to bring criminal charges against Gianni Infantino.
This
is
the newest wrinkle to all of this.
Yeah, this is crazy. So now we're getting the cops involved. So
you can see at the bottom, UEFA is seeking information via discovery in U.S. federal courts from FIFA, Gianni Infantino, and Josh Kushner's Thrive Capital. And they want to take that to the Swiss authorities where FIFA is headquartered and bring real criminal charges against Infantino, FIFA, and Kushner's properties.
And if there was a different president running this administration, yeah, I would say like, okay, maybe you might get some support with that. Because the FIFA, when they raided the offices in Zurich, that was under
Southern District of New York.
But that was under Obama.
It was was it?
It had to be, right? I think I'm pretty sure. It definitely wasn't Trump. There's no way.
No, it wasn't Trump. Yeah, it had to be Obama. Yeah, maybe so, Obama's second term.
Yeah, yeah. So this is an administration that clearly will not go on. This is why you give Trump the Peace Prize. This is why you do all this other stuff to kind of lessen the blow of the news of this, like this scheme to sell off the
Blow is an important word you just said there. But anyway, go ahead.
but this idea that not only, you know, they're trying to, you know, as far as the re-elections for Gianni Infantino, he's trying to win another election to be the FIFA president. Clearly, a lot of countries are not going to support that anymore. But this is the big issue. Are these smaller nations that are sort of just used as like, I don't know, like in the game Risk, you know what I mean? Like you just like you try to gobble up countries to just like, oh, I'll give you this. Just show your support.
It's a lot like the Electoral College in a way. For those of you watching that don't understand American politics, it's hard to explain, but nations having an equal amount of vote kind of tells you. And by the way, if I ran a small, like, here's some of the names, right? So Argentina, a very big nation. We know what's going on over there right now. Yeah, so yeah, obviously that's why they're going with it. Bhutan, Cameroon, Comoros. Never even heard of it. Sorry, everyone. Never heard of that one. DR Congo, Egypt. These are pretty big nations. Grenada. Okay, Grenada. A little bit smaller. Malawi, Mexico. Really big. Shocked by that one. Qatar, Philippines, Sri Lanka, St. Kitts and Nevis, UAE, Sudan, Mongolia. We're seeing nations that probably don't have a shot at a World Cup right now, but they do got a shot at the money that he's waving in front of them.
Mexico got no shot, dog.
Maybe.
It's weird, though.
Sorry, Andre.
For Mexico being in CONCACAF, and CONCACAF has been vehemently against everything going on, or at least, you know, they put out a statement probably a little bit after UEFA did. So I think there's a little bit of like some people seeing like where the wind is blowing.
Yeah, of course. But also this is like, how do I, and Mexico and Argentina and Cameroon, you know, there's some nations in here, like Paraguay. There's some nations in here where I'm like a little bit surprised, you know, but Mauritania? No, I get it. You know what I mean? I get why you would be like, hey, you know what?
I haven't heard from you in years, bro, Mauritania. I picked
the 11 best. They ain't making it. But if you want to put money in my pocket by me saying yes to you in a way that really doesn't affect me in any way, shape, or form,
right.
Why would I not? You know what I mean? And I kind of understand, but this is the power that someone like Gianni Infantino or whoever's the head of FIFA can yield simply by the fact that every nation gets a vote, which there are positives to that, right? Because you can't just have the powerful nations really hold sway. But then at the end of the day, who gives a shit what England or Germany or Italy says? Who cares?
Right.
Because I mean, if you're Mauritanian, you're like, right. Imagine there was a vote against something in cricket. If somebody said, hey, if you vote yes on this, I'll put $20 million in your pocket. But if you vote no, I guess the sport's better off. You'd be like, who cares, bro?
Okay, I've never seen cricket, but bruh, I see money
in
before.
In fact, if I hear what I call an exterminator, so I don't even know what you're talking about, let me go and get that money. So at the end of the day, I kind of get what these small nations do. But this is the power that someone like Gianni Infantino holds. And FIFA doesn't have a function where they can call for an emergency vote. Right now, they have to wait for him to rerun. But UEFA and all these other nations that are against them, Italy included, who just voted. And if you want to hear some of the, these aren't all of them, but Albania, Australia, Croatia, Denmark, England, Greece, Germany, Iceland, Ireland, Italy, the U.S. should be a part of this, but they're not listed here. So I guess
that's only UEFA. I think, right? Is that only UEFA?
No, these are FAs to withdraw support for Infantino.
Okay.
Norway, you know, the Netherlands, Scotland, you're hearing nations that are pulling away. These nations need to come together and find someone that can run against Gianni Infantino and win, because if this guy wins, he's just going to move forward, which is probably why they're going, okay, fine, how about criminal charges? Because what you did is technically illegal. And a big part of it is the valuation. I don't know if you have the quote from the Athletic article. The valuation that Gianni Infantino put on FIFA as an organization is $20 billion. And UEFA is like, we don't even know how you got that number. Mm. That number that you've mysteriously placed on this organization, which we're all members of, might benefit. It might behoove you and Thrive Capital and the Liberty Media, which was another organization that's based, I believe, in Colorado, that's like being drawn into this. It might behoove you guys to have that valuation moving forward. And if for those of you who don't understand what the big issue is Gianni Infantino is trying to put himself in position to continue being able to sell the World Cup and the FIFA properties outside of being the FIFA president. So even after he's done being FIFA president,
like he'll pivot to like a role where he essentially created for himself to continue making money, which is what politicians do when they leave office. They all of a sudden work for the company that they help pass a law for so that they can.
Chris Christie works for what, FanDuel, is it?
DraftKings,
one of them? Yeah, crazy. That right after you made that legal.
Well, you made gambling illegal in New Jersey.
Yeah. Shocked that you work for them now. That's crazy how that works out.
But I wonder, I don't know the sort of legalese around. I mean, did what Gianni Infantino attempt to do, was that a crime? That in itself, if him trying to sell the World Cup or creating this avenue to do this, is that a crime within itself? I do not personally know.
I think UEFA is asking for discovery to find out what the crime is. Because if you would assume if they're trying to bring him up on criminal charges, odds are a crime has been committed, and they're just simply trying to figure out where, what, or what the extent of it was.
So but this sort of goes back to.
And here's the quote we were talking about before.
Right.
It doesn't consider Kushner and Band blameless either. FFE is the organization that Gianni Infantino tried to create to sell the FIFA properties or at least sponsorships for them. The FIFA's most valuable assets to the detriment, otherwise profit. That's what it is. A small circle to acquire a permanent stake in and otherwise profit from FIFA's most valuable assets to the detriment of FIFA. And by the way, UEFA isn't, their hands aren't completely clean on this either, because the reason why FIFA is trying to do this is because there's this ongoing battle between FIFA and UEFA as to who can make more money. Because UEFA right now makes so much more. They make like 10, or the last number I saw was like 4x. They make so much more than FIFA because Champions League draws in so much more value than World Cup's only every 4 years. So that's their biggest piece, which is why they try to make Club World Cup a bigger issue. That UEFA sort of sways much more power in the game than FIFA. And FIFA's upset about that. So FIFA wants to find a way, how do we swing that leverage back to us? The only way to
but
do
why?
That is
why
to make
should
more money.
They want to do that? Like, that's the thing. It's like, that is not the point of FIFA to be mad at the individual FAs or the individual confederations that are successful. The UEFA is successful because FIFA created an environment that it could be successful. There should be a point of pride, but it's obviously people would.
This is how I know you grew up nice, because even I understand. I'm like, I want that power.
Go work for UEFA. What I don't understand, like, you have, it's like you have a, you know, this is like Carmelo Anthony being mad that Jeremy Lin is succeeding, right? Like, it's like, well, now You're gonna guarantee both of your destruction, just like you could
or
all
for
win.
A better reference is like Kat being upset that Jalen Brunson got all the shine in the finals,
sure,
and like pouting about it as opposed to helping.
Exactly, you yeah. all win. Yeah, like, it's not like UEFA's not giving money to FIFA in some capacity. Like, they all sort of succeed, but this is a this is a sort of kind of harkens back to the Sepp Blatter issue. Like what I've heard,
and Avalanche or whatever that guy's name was before Sepp Blatter.
Yes, yes. That what I've heard is, as far as like what could possibly be a crime, and bribery is a very big a common crime within FIFA. We know. So
that's like unequivocally, well, right?
Yeah,
like
that's a
like,
crime anywhere. You can't.
The Southern District of New York has like mounds of papers.
You can't.
About this.
You can't give a fat stack of an envelope of cash to somebody who's voting for one of the member nations to say, like, hey, vote for me in this election. You can't do that. Yeah. That's bribery. That is illegal. But what I've heard is allegedly that Infantino, like the clubs that played in the Club World Cup last year, have not received the money for playing in that tournament yet. And Infantino is like allegedly holding the money, being like, hey, you're not going to get this until you guarantee that your confederation is going to be your country is going to be voting for,
which is a it's nice healthy knees you have.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
It'd be a real shame if somewhere to happen. To that.
And that's so if that is the case and that proves to be true, then yeah, then again we're doing the same exact thing. We're using the role of FIFA president to line the pockets of the people whose pockets you want to line, and that has to stop. And that can't be. And this is why they're going through every legal maneuver they can find to hold Gianni Infantino accountable. Because look, this summer, this even Club World Cup to now, like, again, bending the knee for Donald Trump and still not getting the things that you even wanted. But then why is the Kushner family involved in soccer in any way?
Bro. Because they've found a way to be like, how do I get my grubby hands?
Exactly,
in
man. I'm buying the Lakers too.
Is that true?
Yeah. They're trying to. They're trying to. And then Jeannie Buss is like the only one that's fighting against it. She doesn't want to sell her family stake in the team. But this is, it's like gross. We don't want you involved into our sport, bro.
Bro. It's Albania, already, let him move there so they're not a part of our nation
it's
anymore.
It's already tainted enough. We don't need more.
Which is probably why Albania is on that list of nations that don't want him, actually, now that I think about it.